Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage. Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Anna Glavinsky on TRE in the afternoon.
And I'm joined by Ilana Redstone right now, and we're going to be talking about something that she's called the certainty trap, where people judge others a little bit too harshly and they stay really fixed on their own views. Good afternoon, Ilana. Thank you for joining us this afternoon. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
So let's dive straight in. What exactly is the certainty trap in your words?
So the certainty trap is the contempt that comes as the result, the contempt and moral sort of condemnation that comes from certainty. And in the book, there are lots of ways that that has applications in our personal lives. In the book, I'm largely focused on the political conversation and how moral condemnation has crept in. How and where that came from and what to do about it, and how it's really a lot of the concerns that we see about it's particularly in the U.S., but it's not unique to the U.S. It's elsewhere as well. The concerns we see about free speech and civil discourse and viewpoint diversity and sort of hostility particularly towards conservative views on campuses, that's actually a problem in how that comes from how we think, which is the certainty trap. And so certainty, part of a lot of the book is just getting people to understand that this is actually what's going on.
And how much do you think being certain in your views and rejecting the views of others is inherently human? Or is it something that's evolved through society over time?
It's such a good question. I think to a certain extent, it's actually a really big question. To a certain extent, I think it is human. I think that certainty plays a really important role in terms of group identity, in terms of sort of me, like that instinct to separate us and them is, you know, I'm not the first person to point that out, but that's really powerful. I think the challenge comes in is that in our political conversation, in any aspiring democracy, you have to be able to see the people that you are participating in that project of self-governance with as able to reason their way into their positions, and certainty gets in the way of that. So your question, I'll come back to your question. Your question about, like, to what extent is it just innate? I think it's incredibly innate. I think that the challenge of democracy is the question of, can we overcome that very innate kind of pull? That's sort of what I'm laying out.
And what you're talking about is something I think, as soon as you mention it, we've all noticed it. It's definitely very real.
Yeah.
What's your background in this, and where did you come from to then put pen to paper and write a book about it?
Thank you for asking. So my background is my PhD is in demography and sociology. And so I'm an academic, and for the first part of my career, I just focused on sort of traditional academic things. I studied U.S. immigration from a very, like, just analyzed my data and wrote academic papers that nobody read. And that was what I did for a long time. I think I was always sort of interested in moral and ethical complexity. And that interest, that, you know, where does that come from? That's a longer, you know, that probably goes deep. But I think part of that, I think when I was after college and I was a Peace Corps volunteer in Togo in West Africa. So I don't know if people are familiar with the Peace Corps. It's a 2-year volunteer program that the U.S. has done, that Kennedy started. And you go and you work in a developing country. You volunteer in a developing country. Anyway, so I had that experience. I was fortunate enough to have that experience in Togo and West Africa. And I think that one of the things, people have all kinds of experiences in the Peace Corps. I think one of the things that is often common is that it's morally and ethically complicated. So in the sense of, you know, okay, I'm in this place. Is it by the fact of being here, am I doing more harm than good? Am I propping up a corrupt government? Am I fostering some sort of dependency mentality? Am I right? And so like, it's just those kinds of questions, and that there aren't obvious right and wrong answers. That's sort of the space that I live in, and seeing how that was playing out both in my own campus, in my own discipline of sociology, and also in our broader, both domestically in the US and also internationally, discourse, that was interesting to me. And I guess the other thing I would say is that I feel like it's part of the reason that I wrote about it is because my sense is that it's a problem that's quite poorly understood. So to the extent that I can help shine a light on that, I'm happy to do so.
And would you say then that your mission is to turn people more into fence sitters, watching more sides of an argument? Would you consider yourself something of a fence sitter? And what's your view on people who very strongly and very confidently back their own opinions, especially in the world of politics?
It's such a good question. I don't consider myself a fence sitter. I don't actually have any particular affinity for fence sitters, nor do I think that the answers to the most important questions we face necessarily lie in the middle of anything. I think that what certainty does is it keeps us from making our assumptions clear and explicit, because we think that they're so obvious that they don't need to be said out loud. And when we don't say things out loud, when we don't name them, no one else gets a chance to sort of question them. This goes back a long way. If I say smoking is bad for your health, and we sort of take that as given, if I'm assuming that you're going to then say, well, you shouldn't smoke, right? The part that we're not saying out loud is you care about your health, right? Which seems obvious. It's a silly example, but imagine that kind of example. If you're talking about immigration, pronouns, Black Lives Matter, anything, like, it's not that the answer lies necessarily in the middle. Where the right answer lies depends on what we're trying to do. And certainty keeps us from making those goals clear. It keeps us from making our assumptions explicit. And when we don't make them clear or explicit, nobody else gets to question them. And democracy is fundamentally about being able to question ideas and claims and all of the space of democratic deliberation. So I don't think of myself as a fence sitter, and I think fence sitting is fine, but I don't think it's necessarily the answer. And I guess the other thing I would say is there's nothing about what I'm saying that says that people can't or shouldn't have really strong opinions about things. You could have very strong opinions. The question is, like, the question that you're asking yourself is, can I come up with a version of the other, of somebody who objects to my argument, somebody who sees it completely differently, that would make sense to me? And so by make sense, I mean that I can't blame on them having bad intentions, being racist, misogynist, whatever, and also that I can't blame on them being ignorant. And so there's nothing. So can I come up with that version in my head, regardless of anyone's actually putting words to it? That's the question that you're asking, and that you should be able to say yes to. We should all be able to say yes to. That doesn't mean that you can't have a strong opinion.
Does that make sense? Yeah, I'm so glad that you brought up some examples there as well, because that's sort of where I wanted to go next. Because you also talk about not judging other people, not being so critical of other people and their opinions. And so what you're saying is, by all means, have your own strong opinions, but try and understand where somebody else is coming from. I don't know if you have examples in your book, could you give us like a real basic example of somebody who thinks X about one thing and how they might be challenged, but be able to accept the person who thinks why on another thing, using a clear real life example?
No, that's a it's a great question. So let's say that I am trying to think. I mean, I'll go with the immigration example because that seems to be it's perhaps the most.
Right now.
It's a hot topic, and it's a hot topic in so many different countries. Mm-hmm. So for an international audience, it might be the most applicable. So if I say. And there's a reason, let me just back up for a second. There's a reason in the book and in a lot of this work that many, not all, but many of the examples that I use tend to come from the left, politically, the progressive side. There's a reason for that, which I can explain, but I'll just preface this by saying that. And I have explained that a little bit better in the paperback version of the book. So on immigration, the question would, let's say that I think that, you know, the idea that we would question whether immigrants are integrating into British society, into American society, into Spanish society, into, right, that the mere question of asking, like, is this group of people, or is this sort of latest wave of immigration, are they integrating, whatever that means, you could define it however you want, are they integrating in society? If I'm saying that opinion is just by dint of the asking the question is xenophobic, is racist, right? So that is a view that some people will take, that just the act of asking a question about, the old word used to be assimilation, but assimilation, integration, whatever the right word is now, that is somehow rooted in a desire to keep brown and black people out of the country, which it may be, right? Like, which I'm not denying, nothing in what I'm saying is a denial that that could possibly be the case. But the question that you're asking yourself, you ask for a real life example, is, can I come up with an argument for why someone would have concerns about immigrant integration in country X, Y, and Z that have nothing to do with racism, bigotry, xenophobia, etc., and that are not the result of their ignorance? That's the question that you're asking yourself. It's not a claim that there aren't people who are racist, xenophobic, et cetera, whatever. It's that you're, can I come up with that version, right? So yes, if I'm looking at my list of possible explanations for why somebody would be concerned about immigrant integration, racism and xenophobia, et cetera, are one of those items on the one possible explanation. Can I come up with another possible explanation that has nothing to do with that? That's the question that you're asking yourself, and the certainty trap keeps us from being able to answer. But we should all be able to answer that. That's true across the political spectrum. That's true for almost every issue.
And do you think the answer is going inside yourself and looking for it there, or is it speaking to other people who share opposite opinions?
You have such good questions. I think that we tend to, the easiest way to answer it is by talking to other people. I'm not sure it is the best way to answer it. The reason is that, so talking to other people, this is where we sort of lean into, well, I'm going to put a liberal person in a conservative room person, see, let them sort of hash it out and stuff, which isn't bad. I think that what that ends up doing is it means it's assuming that that the people involved are good at explaining their own thinking, which I don't think that's always the case. I don't think any of us are necessarily well practiced at explaining our own thinking. The other thing that I would say, and perhaps the deeper point about why I think it's important to come up with it on my own, like to come up with the version of that argument on my own, regardless of whether it's coming out of someone else's mouth or not, is because when I come up with it on my own, I'm much less likely to find little ways to sort of pull it apart. I'm not, right, because I'm generating it on my own through my own thinking. And it has to do with the sort of inherent legitimacy of the position and not making the legitimacy of the position a function of whether or not the other person explains themselves well. Because they may not explain themselves well, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the position itself is morally illegitimate intrinsically. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So it's not about, yeah, being the best verse, the best debater on the school debate team.
Right.
Absolutely.
I think that's right.
And your book itself, how does it read? Is it set up to challenge people who read it to ask themselves those questions? Do you have examples? Is it lighthearted? Is it a pretty big undertaking?
I have gotten all kinds of reactions from the book. Like, I had one person who called it a statistics textbook. I was like, but that's not really what I was going for. But and other people who just sort of like feel like it's, wow, you're putting words to something that I've been thinking about and I haven't really been able to put words to. I've had other people call it a self-help book. So I think I try to keep it lighthearted. I mean, there's a lot of, to me, I try and walk a line between sort of keeping it lighthearted, but also it's a very substantive argument, and it's also somewhat philosophical, but making that accessible. So there's a reason I deliberately published the book with a trade press and not with an academic press, because I wanted it to be accessible to a non-academic audience. And people can argue about how well I did that. but that was the goal, and that was the thinking.
It sounds like it's a sort of book that somebody's going to have to be brave enough to take a look at themselves and be, you know, want to challenge themselves a little bit by reading it. But it sounds absolutely fascinating. It's called The Certainty Trap: Why We Need to Question Ourselves More and How We Can Judge Others Less. It's by Ilana Redstone, and you can find it on Amazon or the Talk Radio Europe bookshop. Ilana, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. Goodbye.
Thank you so much. Bye.